Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Neil Wilson, chief market analyst at markets.com. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Yeah. Not caught the coronavirus yet.
I'm glad to hear it. Although I did see that you'd had a nasty dose of flu or something, or man flu at least.
I think it's man flu.
Man flu. Yeah. Would whiskey cure?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, one of the reasons we've got you on today is because it's a great time to talk about markets, and that's what you do. And also, as it happens, you've taken over the morning trading email.
Yeah, well, hopefully people are enjoying it, and I'm certainly enjoying writing it. So there's no shortage of market moves to talk about. We're seeing the Dow move 1,000 points a day at the moment. It's certainly interesting times.
Yeah, interesting times. That's not the old Chinese proverb, isn't it? It's like, yeah. May you live in interesting times, and no, it's a threat, isn't it? More than yeah.
and not eat bat soup.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so we've spoken about the coronavirus before on this podcast, Phil and I. Spent a lot of time talking about it last week and really kind of what investors should do and how they should perhaps think about what this has highlighted. And really, it's kind of brought about a big dose of risk aversion.
Yeah, for
although,
sure.
Although it is whipsawing, or what did you call it earlier?
Wanging around.
Wanging around.
Yeah, it's a technical term. I think what you've seen is that the bond market is completely driving stocks at the moment. So we've seen U.S. 10-year yields, which are the sort of benchmark yield for the world, and everything gets dragged along by the U.S. 10-year yield, whether it's gilts or even the ECB, even bonds. You know, they are moving really on what's happening to the U.S. yield,
and that dropped to a key figure
0.9% basically, which
first time ever.
Yeah, first time ever. So a record low. So the bond market is really dragging stocks around at the moment, and that's premised on sort of risk aversion, that people want to get into bonds, but it's also premised on the idea that probably the Federal Reserve and other central banks will be cutting rates and therefore forcing down yields to record lows.
Well, the Fed did cut rates this week, so there was an emergency, and that was what it was called.
Yeah,
an emergency 50 basis point cut.
Yeah, I mean,
it's significant.
It is. I think the thing, what was interesting about that was that it was so expected, or at least a cut of that size was expected within 2 weeks, within the sort of time scale of the meeting. So there was going to be a meeting this month anyway.
But wasn't the unusual thing that it was done so far in advance of the scheduled meeting?
Yeah, it is unusual. I think why, you know, the stock market sort of rallied on Monday, the US market rallied 5% on Monday and then was off 4% on Tuesday, and in between that was the cut. So the market had sort of rallied on the expectation of cuts and expectation of this G7 call, which had happened, where we thought there was maybe going to be a coordinated response. But we didn't really get a coordinated response. All we got was the US Federal Reserve coming out with this big cut.
I mean, there are expectations that the Bank of England will follow suit, the ECB
will
follow
for sure.
suit, but they haven't actually done anything.
They haven't done anything yet, and I think the G7 statement that came out didn't really tell us anything that we didn't already know, which is that policymakers will use all appropriate tools that they have in order to sustain the economy. I mean, that's sort of stating the obvious in a sense.
I guess, there is a question around all this. I mean, lots of people responded to that cut. So the market responded well and then didn't.
Well,
that begs a question. I mean, why the sudden enthusiasm for the cut and then almost immediately the kind of reversion to fear?
Mm-hmm. I think at the moment we've had, like, for I guess for 10 years we've had a buy the dip mentality. So whenever the stock market sells off, it's a great opportunity to get into it, because that's your chance to get a slightly better price than it was, because everyone's trying to get in, but constantly thinking, oh, it's expensive, so they wait for the sell-off and then they come in.
But it's been constantly going up, which I guess,
and it's constantly going up,
that mentality.
Exactly. And then now what we've seen, I think because of the bond market, the collapse in yields, is that you've reverted to a mentality where you're selling into rallies. So you get a rally off some headline of a 50 basis point cut, and then, you know, it starts to look a bit extended. It starts to look like, well, we've rallied 1,000 points in a day. Now is the time to take, you know, maybe now is the time to come out. So there's been a switch in the market mentality, which drives it ultimately, which is to sell into rallies.
Not a sign of distress.
Yeah.
More than a sign
for sure. A sign of great uncertainty. Yeah, it's great uncertainty. No one actually knows how the virus will progress or what sort of economic impact there will be. What are the earnings expectations going to be like? What will there be earnings recession? Will there be, you know, because we saw, particularly last year, we saw a big expansion. We keep talking about the US market because it sort of drives everything.
I think focus on the US market. It's where the action is at the moment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've saw a massive multiple expansion in 2019. It wasn't off the back of earnings growth. It was multiple expansion.
And there was earnings growth, but a lot of that was buyback driven.
Precisely. So sort of fake earnings growth, essentially. but you saw massive multiple expansion in that in 2019. And so you need earnings to follow through in 2020 in order to justify that expansion. And the problem now is that the coronavirus has suddenly created this environment where people are thinking that it's not going to be earnings growth, it's going to be a recession. And you see that with like the airlines coming out with profits warnings, and companies are starting to come out with profits warnings, but not quite yet. I think we need to see over the next 4 to 6 weeks exactly what the damage will be.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I mean, let's focus on airlines for the time being, because there was a very significant release by a big US airline.
Yeah, so Southwest on Thursday, they said that their Q1 earnings would be reduced by $200 to $300 million. It's a profits warning, right? It's and that's after Norwegian. So Norwegian Air, which is a troubled airline.
I saw your tweet on this morning. Yeah. There was 2 days difference between saying no impact of the coronavirus and actually we're going to cut all these scheduled flights.
Yeah. So in the space of 2 days, Norwegian, which is not the best airline, or sorry, it's not the best balance sheet for any airline, have gone from March 3rd saying no problems, it's all fine, to scrapping guidance and cancelling lots of flights. And IEG, which owns BA, is doing the same. And I think the Southwest warning today sort of suggests that some of these profits warnings could be quite big for the airlines.
Southwest is a largely domestic airline in the US?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yes.
Because there is also this school of thought that the coronavirus itself, its deadliness, it has been overblown.
But it doesn't matter how bad it is. It doesn't matter how bad the illness is. If the authorities respond in a certain way, and the economic impact is such, that's what affects the stock market. The stocks, you know, the market's not moving because of how bad the illness is. It's how bad the response is, and how much you curtail, or how much people voluntarily can curtail their spending. Companies stop people from traveling. Companies stop people from doing stuff.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, we spoke about this briefly before we started recording, but you know, airlines have always been notoriously cyclical, so very, very sensitive to economic activity. So you would expect something like this, you know, to something like the coronavirus to have this kind of impact. And what we were talking about, which I've alluded to in my editorial, is what if this change is more permanent than people expect?
Yeah.
So you know, airlines are already, and we've written about this in the magazine, in the sort of firing line of the climate change lobby. Flugscham, I think we call it. the shame of taking a flight, knowing
why
how economically damaged.
Always a German word for something, isn't there?
There's a Swedish one as well. Indeed. The shame of taking a flight, but knowing how environmentally damaging it is. Mm-hmm. And you know, business travel is a significant part of the business of these companies. And you know, coronavirus, has that created a situation where people go, okay, you know what, we won't travel. Mm-hmm. We'll start using these video conferencing tools, you know, remote working tools. People can work at home, and it changes behavior permanently. That I think is a fear that hasn't really been talked about. What if this means that the airline's structural growth story is completely undermined for decades to come?
Yeah, I think that's a very, very, very strong point and very valid. It's companies will reassess based on the fact that they managed to get through the coronavirus on not traveling or whatever it might be.
Makes them a little bit more ESG friendly.
Yeah, so that's, you know, it suits the shareholders, or it suits their mandate that they've been given to cut emissions by X percentage and that kind of thing. So yeah, they're gonna use this as a I guess it's a catalyst for change. The change that's already happening, though. It's with the trend. I think that's the thing. It sort of just makes things speed up.
Yeah, my editorial is called The Wrong End of the Trend. And I think there are a number of companies that you know, fall into this category. The one I've highlighted is Cineworld, as an example, which its shares have taken a battering this week, as you would kind of expect. People don't tend to want to hang out in large groups if there is a risk of a contagion knocking about. But then there is other things that are making its life difficult. And you know, the example I refer to in my editorial is streaming services.
Yeah.
So like Netflix, its shares have actually risen this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's Netflix is, you know, you're going to stay in, then you're going to... But I think the thing is, you can make sort of slightly flippant comments about, well, people have to stay in and therefore they'll order Domino's pizzas and...
They've had a shocker this week.
And watch, and watch Netflix, and therefore, you know, they're going to do better. But the important point is that structural shift maybe that this might help with. And, you know, people are talking about the fact that this just accelerates a decoupling of supply chains and the decoupling of economies, because people realize that there are risks. And it forces them apart, and it's actually very hard to come back together. It's easy to get split apart, but it's harder to come back together.
Well, again, this was something we spoke about. You know, that whole sort of deglobalization story has been driven up until now by the trade war.
Yeah.
And, you know, Trump's idea that we can reshore a lot of stuff that we've sent out to China. China is taking America for a ride. But this adds, again, as you say, a catalyst to this whole process. Mm-hmm. And it's something that actually I read a really fantastic piece in The Spectator this week written by Kate Andrews about this very, very subject. Will this accelerate? And it's something actually Phil alluded to at the end of our podcast last week. But yeah, shortening those supply chains, changing the way that companies are supplied. This is potentially a fundamental shift in the way the global economy works.
Yeah. So I guess it fulfills two things: de-risks, and it fulfills this new ESG thing where shareholders now are actually demanding that you are carbon neutral, or you know, you've seen BP come out with the most radical sort of plan to become carbon neutral. If BP's doing that, then it just shows the pressure that boards feel under pressure to fulfill certain criteria, and that affects their decision making and affects investment decisions and every decision, I guess.
It just feels so. It feels like we're at this confluence of, like, well, big trends like ESG, deglobalization, with this catalyst of coronavirus. This, I mean, you know, there is uncertainty enough as it is. This is beyond any uncertainty I've seen before. You know, even at times like the dot-com boom.
Yeah,
and bust.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think even the financial crisis was basically a, you know,
we knew what was happening.
It was a credit crunch.
Yeah,
it was all it was. It was just a lack of liquidity, lack of credit in the market that caused the problem. It was a financial problem. This is actually a real world problem. And that is fundamentally different. And that actually means that companies' earnings will be affected because of consumers making different decisions, because of company bosses making different decisions on where they source stuff from.
So there is very real potential for a wave of profit warning across all markets for the next couple of months.
I mean, I think we'll see. I mean, I guess the thing is it just a profits warning for Q1, Q2, and then we're all good? Or does it fulfill that structural sort of shift that you're talking about?
If only we knew. I guess that's what makes stock markets.
That's why the Dow is moving by 1,000 points a day, because no one actually knows.
Yeah, and it's why people are seeking solace and safety in bonds and gold. Have you looked at the gold price lately?
I have, yes. It was last up around 1,640.
Okay, that's about where it's peaked so far. But,
yeah, it did. It's fascinating the way gold moved, because it peaked at 1,690. It approached 1,690, which was the sort of extension target that we talked about. And then it completely came off and fell back below 1,600. So there's a massive bout of profit taking last week by hedge funds, but leverage funds who were searching for somewhere to get cash in order to cover positions, in order to, you know, they needed to raise some cash. And so gold was the ideal way to do that, to sell those gold holdings, which had made a whopping great return for a while. But I think now we're getting the reassertion of the trend, which is for gold to rally. And I think we see, you know, when US real yields, which is benchmark yields minus inflation or plus inflation, they are now deeply negative. So like out to the 10-year yield in real terms is actually negative 0.44% or something.
So I guess, the case for not owning gold has always been that it doesn't pay anything.
Yeah, but that case is now gone. If real yields are negative, then the case for holding gold is very strong.
It's very, very strong indeed.
Yeah, and you see the correlation is fantastic. It's a negative correlation, but it's absolutely spot on.
Yeah. Should we talk about oil recently? Because I know that's something you've been looking at as well in your missives recently. Because oil is sort of, it's almost like doing the converse of gold at the moment.
Yeah.
And I guess that's because it's so sensitive to the economy.
Yeah, I mean, oil's come off sort of over 30% since its high at the start of the year. And that's because of the virus, because demand in China has been completely... China's the biggest importer of oil, and demand has been absolutely... smashed. And the problem with that is that you see demand destruction with oil. It completely goes. You don't recover that demand.
Which is something I've actually written about too, about in terms of airlines. You know,
yes.
Someone doesn't take a flight today, they're not going to take the same flight in 2 weeks' time.
Exactly. Same with restaurants, cinemas, as we talked about. It's the same sort of idea. The OPEC cartel is looking at cutting aggressively. Over 1 million barrels per day is being talked about at the moment. Russia has not necessarily been on side, but it should be on side, I think. But the point is that OPEC can keep cutting production, but they can't do anything about the demand side, and they can't do anything about the supply side that's ex-OPEC. So OPEC and its allies is basically Russia plus Saudi Arabia. But the US is exporting a record amount. Norway's producing more. Brazil's producing more. So you're seeing a lot more coming on stream, and you're seeing this demand destruction. So it's going to be very tough for OPEC to actually do anything about the prices.
Yeah, bad news for big oil then?
Yeah, well, I think we've seen Shell at 52-week low, and I think that oil will come back. Prices will come back, but near term it's certainly a headwind. But I would say that maybe Shell at a 52-week low is not a bad shout.
As a buy?
We're
struggling there.
Not quite.
No. I don't think you're in the business of recommendations.
Of recommendation, no.
Absolutely. But that's fair enough. I mean, it is interesting. It all feels quite deflationary, an oil price tanking like that, which is the thing that all governments want to avoid.
Well, yeah, they do, but I thought low inflation was going to be good. I mean,
yeah, but they've got all stuff full of debt. You want to inflate the debt away. The debt gets bigger in a deflationary environment.
Exactly.
And there's too much of that washing about, particularly in China.
Yes.
That's a story for another time. Should we talk about some companies? This is the Companies and Markets show.
Sure.
I would ask you what your outlook for markets is, but I don't think there is one right now.
I think we see, I mean, broadly, we see a lot of stress for some, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months. But then you see the US election towards the end of the year, and then maybe some... Once you get through the coronavirus, once you get through the election, then you start to consider that things will pick up. There'll be sectors that will be struggling still. Maybe airlines are one of them. But there will be sectors. But broadly speaking, I think you see a pickup after sort of... I mean, you see it in China now. Like, they're already starting to get activities coming back online. And I think that will happen in, say, 6 months' time.
Yeah. I mean, you actually talk in your piece today about something that's been very much overshadowed by this whole market mayhem and coronavirus outbreak, which is what's going on in the US presidential elections.
Yeah.
And you think it matters?
Yeah, it does, for sure. I mean, the amazing thing was that the rally on Wednesday for the Dow, which was another 1,100-point rally, the second biggest ever, the biggest ever being on Monday, where it's in points terms, it's not percentage terms, that was entirely based off the fact that Joe Biden had done well in the Democrat primaries, and therefore that reduces the chances of Bernie Sanders becoming the president. And Sanders is a sort of avowed socialist.
But it sounds very familiar to the election scenario around here not too long ago. Are Americans really going to vote for, an avowed socialist?
No, I don't think they are, but it's such a partisan system that it means it's always going to be super close. So there's always going to be people that stick to their party
yeah,
you know, the party line. And it's, you know, Trump won not massively last time. And I think, you know, you only need a couple of, much like our system, you only need a couple of states to go the other way. And
but what we saw here, kind of, you know, if you extrapolated that to the US,
yeah,
you know, there was a lot of market concern that Jeremy Corbyn was doing quite well in the polls before the election, and then he got absolutely trounced.
Yeah, well, I guess that maybe that should markets exhibit too much fear and too much, they go too extremely. There's too much fear when things look bad, and there's too much euphoria when things look good, and that, you know, sort of maybe something a bit more in the middle might be more appropriate.
Something we should keep an eye on, though, you reckon, the US presidential election cycle?
Yeah, for sure. I think Joe Biden is looking a bit better now. I think if he's up against Trump, what that does is, it, funnily enough, it actually raises the chances that Trump loses, and therefore that's probably bad.
Biden, you mean?
Yes, right, Biden.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, whereas if Sanders is up against him, then we think Trump's going to walk it. Which is good for the stock market.
Especially as you can keep telling the Federal Reserve what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, they'll be...
Which he, of course, isn't doing.
They'll be at zero by the election, by this rate.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on. Interesting thing happening this week is the FTSE Quarterly Review, which you've mentioned in your piece today. What have we? Who's coming in? FTSE 100, Fresnillo.
Fresnillo, back in.
They've been having a shocker lately.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you teeter around the top, the top end of the FTSE 250, then you're gonna be a candidate. I think it's the story's really in who's gone out, and
yeah,
NMC Health has obviously had its problems.
Have we written about them this week in the magazine? I seem to remember. Yes, we have.
I mean,
I don't think there's been a week we haven't.
I mean, that's a disaster of governance.
It's not something you expect to see in a FTSE 100 company.
No,
I have to say.
No, it's
it's extraordinary.
I think that you know, arguably there's people that will need to answer for that.
TUI's gone as well.
TUI's sort of just being hit by this coronavirus hit, but also structurally package holidays problem, and also they've had a bit of a hit from the Boeing crisis with the MAX 737.
Yeah, they seem to be worse hit than anyone actually by this. It's very odd.
It's hard for them. I think there was a lot of optimism when Thomas Cook failed, because you thought, well, TUI's going to get all the business.
Well, Flybe's gone this morning, and you saw a little bounce in airline share prices.
It bounced and then it came off with the rest of the market.
I mean, it did bounce.
Yeah, it did bounce. There was some bid on those stocks because of the loss of Flybe. I think that's, you'll see that more and more. It's just fewer airlines operating, fewer tour operators.
Well, the capacity's got to come out of the market. Yeah. It's got to come out of the market. It's savage.
Yes.
And I mean, again, it's something I've referred to quite a lot. You know, just watch out for those companies that are, A, structurally weak, and and their frailties are exposed by what's happening in markets and with this lockdown.
Yeah.
This virus lockdown. Oh, who else has gone? Kingfisher.
Yeah, Kingfisher.
Like a nice bit of Screwfix, though.
I've written about Kingfisher for 4 years now, and it's just been consistently bad in France and consistently good with Screwfix. But they need to split the company up, I think.
Maybe UK France.
Maybe you split off Screwfix, or maybe you split off UK France. Well, whatever it is, but there's no real synergy from keeping them together.
Yeah, do you know, I always struggled to write about this company, mainly because understanding French DIY habits, I found it impossible to do it. As does it seem, the chief executive of Kingfish.
Well, that's it. And they tried to. The thing is, they tried this one sourcing strategy where they thought, well, we'll buy. You know, be a big company and we'll buy it all on the cheap. But of course, the fittings and fixtures that are used in Poland are not the same as in Paris and as in London. So it's all quite tricky to do it that way.
Yeah.
I think maybe they've suffered a bit in the UK with some, you know, slowdown in the property market and that kind of thing. But I think it's a deeper problem for them.
Yeah, I mean, because we spoke on this podcast last week about Howden Joiner, which is doing pretty well.
Yeah,
you know, and if it was a market problem that the housing market was so soft that there was nothing for these companies to tap into, then you would have expected to see that in Howden as well.
Yeah, I think you can look at it. The French business has really suffered.
We said that Topps had a big profit warning the other day.
Who's
Tops Sales.
Tops.
Yeah. So I think this is an example of why you need to look at the business in more detail rather than trying to make investment decisions off of what sort of broad market
things
are telling you. Yeah. What else have we got in there? You wrote about ITV today and supermarket. Why did you write about supermarkets? What's happening there?
Oh, yeah. Well, Tesco. So Tesco's going to price match Aldi on hundreds of items. So that is a, you know, we're back into supermarket price wars.
Wow.
Which we were in, what, a couple of years ago, and seems to have sort of died down a bit, all that. But I think we're into a new price war.
Wasn't great news for any of the supermarkets at the time, if I remember right.
No, it's not a good plan, is it, to collectively cut margins?
No, although, you know, I guess Tesco, I think Tesco's done a great job of getting itself back on its feet after some of the problems it had in the past. Most of the problems the big supermarkets have faced have been because of changes in consumer behaviour, like we talked about before. People go and shop at Aldi or Lidl in, you know, when times are tight, and they never go back.
That's it, yeah. Morrison's is probably the one that seems to be struggling in terms of its share price. Nearly got dropped out of the FTSE 100 actually this week. So it's not ideal for the supermarkets to be engaging in a price war at this time. And I think you'll see that will compress margins. It's maybe the only way they can go, but for shareholders, it's probably not going to be ideal.
No.
And ITV just seems to have taken a bit of a hit from the fact that airlines are not going to be advertising. So they're seeing ad revenues down 10% in April, largely because of holiday companies and airlines not advertising.
It was always that Jet 2. That's the only travel ad I can seem to remember.
It's on the My
daughter, Dart Group, isn't it?
It's Dart, yeah. My daughter, her dance class uses that, the music from that for one of the routines that they do. So she's always dancing in front of the telly.
It's Jess Glynn. I shouldn't admit to knowing that. I've got teenage daughters as well. In fact, we've written about the holiday industry in this week's magazine, in the news feature, looking at the impact of coronavirus. I mean, it's savage. Savage, especially if you're a cruise operator.
Well, I was going to go skiing in 4 weeks, but I'm not now.
Aren't you? No. I was supposed to be going. I'm going to Vienna.
Okay.
At Easter.
Yeah.
You think I'm going to make it?
I think we had very specific requirements based on my extended family. So it didn't quite work out.
That's a shame. Had you paid for it?
No.
Yeah, we have.
No, hence why I'm quite happy just to pull out.
Yeah. No, we have paid for it. So, you know, I guess this is something a story that might come out down the line. You know, if lots of people are cancelling holiday plans, what's the impact on the insurance industry?
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of insurance report this week.
Have they actually said much about
there's not
this?
Been.
I haven't seen.
There's not been any real detail on the coronavirus. They've not been commenting on that, from what I can tell.
No, we had lots and lots of results, as you say.
Admiral did very well. I think record profits.
Yeah,
for them.
Insurance looks all right, but. I don't think we've even seen any real coronavirus business.
That might come in 3 months' time.
Yeah, we had a lot of results this week. It was very, very busy indeed. It's been a fun week. It's been a very, very fun week. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
It's been fantastic. Keep the morning outlooks coming in, Neil. We're all enjoying them very much, as I hope the readers are. Let us know if you've got any feedback there. And let me just talk you through what else we've got in the magazine this week. All the usual stuff. Algie Hall looking at a value stock screen. It's a very interesting angle, psychological angle to that, which I won't mention on this podcast because it's a bit X-rated as it happens. it's a real experiment, but he felt he had to include it.
I'm intrigued. I want to.
I hope everyone's intrigued. Yeah. I was intrigued. He was telling me about it and also slightly shocked. lots and lots of company results, as I suggested. Lots in the personal finance and fund section, which they'll talk about on their podcast tomorrow. Lots and lots of news and comments. Phil Oakley's looking at National Express this week, which has been a horror of a company, but Phil actually thinks it's starting to look okay. And Phil will be back here next week, coronavirus allowing. We've got a contingency plan. You'll keep getting your magazines. And all the usual. We've actually got a new trader in the magazine this week as well, Michael Taylor, and he's looking at Fevertree and some of the price action there and what it tells us about how you can build some sort of trading stuff into how you're looking at investing in companies like this. NMC, holiday companies, which is all pretty hideous. WPP, pretty hideous. Into Properties, pretty hideous.
Disaster.
And then a sort of disaster averted in the form of serious minerals. Mm. I mean, it's a disaster for people that bought that at the top. But
yeah, Anglo played a blinder there.
They did play a blinder, but lots of people are really cross. Yeah. But the vote got through anyway. So Anglo is buying Sirius, and the project survives, and people get some money back, although there was a lot of acrimony.
It's pretty brutal for a lot of people.
It has been brutal. I feel for them. Thank you very much for listening. The main feature in the magazine this week is our ISA special, 50 Smart ISA Ideas. Lots and lots of things you can put in your ISA there as we approach the end of the tax year. Thank you all for listening. 50 Smart ISA Ideas, the most profitable ways to use the UK's most popular tax break. I'll be back again next week. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you very much.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.